Hope you're having a good lead-up to Thanksgiving. We're recording the Wednesday podcast on Wednesday, of course. So for those listening before, during, or maybe after, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Goodman and Parrish are here with me. Parrish, I believe, hates Thanksgiving. We'll get to that in a little bit. The story that has taken over college basketball in a week where it's actually one of the best weeks of the season with all the exempt tournaments and the big boys playing each other is this 5'10 white boy from Iowa who plays D3, isn't even on a scholarship, puts up 138 points, Jack Taylor. By now you've no doubt heard about it. It's a story that's going to be one of the biggest stories on this Wednesday, regardless of the sport. So we're going to lead with that, and then we're going to get into...
Seriously?
Yeah. Yeah.
We're going to lead with this?
It is the biggest story in college basketball on Wednesday.
Gary, can we start this thing over and lead with something relevant?
Well, I mean, you got to figure out how you want to define relevant. If relevant is, it is what everybody is talking about right now at this moment and have been for the past 12 hours, then that's certainly it. I mean, the number one team in the country played in overtime last night. An elite freshman at Michigan State suffered a shoulder injury that's going to keep him sidelined for a few weeks. North Carolina got pounded by Butler, and there is no debating that the biggest story in college basketball is a Division III player scoring 138 points, for better or worse.
Oh, God, I just can't believe it. I mean, I watched the video, and honestly, I didn't think I'd ever see a guy play worse defense or less defense than Jimmer Fredette. But we just saw it. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's not even basketball what they were playing.
Right. So you come down on the – I mean, you're essentially – you hate this. And that's totally – a valid opinion.
It's a joke. It's comical. The coach should be fired for playing that way. This isn't basketball. This isn't teaching kids how to play good basketball. I mean, honestly, it's like – it's what I would teach to my – and I wouldn't even do it. So, like, if I had, like, a fourth grade, you know, team and we just wanted to have fun and, you know, run up the score and pad the stats. That's all it is.
Sounds to me like Goodman's taking Division III basketball a little too seriously. I would say, listen, if you want to start firing coaches for not teaching proper basketball, we can do that all day long. This is the way they play. It's gimmicky. It's at least on some level entertaining, and it does bring interest to what they're doing in a way that is otherwise unattainable. Look right here. What are we talking about? What is everybody talking about? Go to the comments section on CBSSports.com right now. Jeff wrote about the possible number one pick in the draft, Shabazz Muhammad. I wrote about the number one team in the country playing a game in overtime. That's Indiana. And neither one of our columns are getting anywhere close to the 150 words I wrote about this Division III player. So, I don't care about teaching basketball the right way or anything like that. I will say this, that if this happened, you know, this has sort of been celebrated over the past 12 hours. But the other side of it is like, what are you doing? Like, you know, you're just, you know, we when a guy sits out the final game of the regular season in Major League Baseball to ensure a batting title, we roll our eyes at that. If Kobe goes out and tries to score 80 on the last day of the season to win a scoring title, we roll our eyes at that. When a guy throws a ball off the backboard to get a rebound so that he can get a triple-double, we roll our eyes at that. And how is this any different? This was, you know, nobody should be taking 101 shots in a basketball game. Nobody should be on the court 35 minutes in a game with the
70-point game or whatever it was.
Right. So I don't understand why we roll our eyes at all those other things, but don't look at this in a similar fashion.
To me, it's nuts. All right, so the game, I think, is a farce. I also think it's fascinating because you got this kid, David Larson, for the losing team for Faith Baptist Bible College. So he's gonna go home to Thanksgiving to see his family, and he'll be like, I had just the most incredible game, 70 points. Oh, my God, dude, I can't even believe it. Yeah, and it was barely half of what the other guy had. And I spoke with the coach of the losing team this morning, and his 70 was nearly as egregious because basically he was told to cherry pick. I mean, he played the least amount of defense of anyone, because what Grinnell does is they basically, if you advance past half court, they concede the layup and they run down and jack it. I mean, it's just
ridiculous. It's really comical. I mean, you watch it and all you can do is laugh, because I mean, all they're doing is giving up two or three on the other end.
Yeah. And by the way, Gary Short changed them. It was 108 field goals taken, including 71 from three. And I feel a little weird celebrating this, because it's like, if he had, it's as weird, as ridiculous as it sounds, if he put up like 94 and it was somewhat in the flow of the game and he was just ridiculously hot, it would be incredible. But the fact that he's still in the game when it's so out of reach and he's still jacking up threes, I don't know. It's a little bit of, I don't know, an insult. I don't want to take it too seriously or hear anything. I mean, the kid's got Kobe talking about him. You know, it's the game of a lifetime. It's something that people will talk about, you know, 50 years from now. Yeah, totally. I mean, I get it.
It's cool for the kid. What it reminds me a little bit of, on a different level, you might remember a few years ago when Jimmy Patsos, who I love, is a trip, you know, just decided he wasn't going to try to win the game. He was just going to try to shut down Steph Curry. Do you remember this game?
Oh, yeah.
And
put a guy with him, right?
He put one guy, two in the corner on him, right? Yeah. Right?
Yes, put two on him. And so Davidson basically played 4-on-3 the whole game. And Patsos afterwards said, listen, we probably – I mean, I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact quote. But his essential point was, you know, listen, we're going to lose the game no matter what. Let's just go out and try to do something that people are going to talk about. And I didn't, you know, I love Jimmy, but I didn't like that approach. It seemed like it was getting away from what you're supposed to be trying to do. And what happened last night in that Division III game also seems like it's getting away from what you're supposed to be trying to do. Let me be clear. If you want to play this fast-paced full-court attack and just jack threes, that's your style. That's fine. But that's not what they were doing last night. They took it to another level. They just told a certain kid, you shoot it every time. We're in New York for the NIT season tip-off tonight, and I imagine if John Beilein wanted to say tonight to one of his players, I want you shooting every time within 5 seconds of crossing half court, you know, somebody for that team could get up 100 shots too. But, you know, would we sell it? Would we make it notable? It's not like this kid went out and shot 70% from three and 80 from the field. His percentages are actually pretty terrible. He just took a hell of a lot of shots, scored a hell of a lot of points. And where I do find it interesting, and it's very clearly interesting because everybody's talking about it, I don't know that it's one of these great achievements, because in reality, if you give anybody the same instructions that this coach gave this kid, you know, we could probably get that done again by the end of the week.
Yeah, I mean, it crosses over between from fantastic into the ridiculous, and they couldn't have picked a better team to do it against, because this Faith Baptist Bible College only has 10 guys. The school has 250 kids, and 8 of them are freshmen and sophomores. You know, and if we would have told me a kid scored 138 in a game at any level, which I have to believe is an American basketball, organized basketball record on any sort. Like, there's no way this has happened in recorded history before. If you would have told me it was a 5'10 sophomore from Iowa, I mean, he's not like a dominating, intimidating figure. I mean, you wouldn't even pick him in the first four or five guys at the Y in an intramural game. It's a bizarre one. And
They ran it up also.
That's my point, is that, okay, like, this kid got the record, and you know, I didn't know his name yesterday at this time. Neither did you. Neither did anybody. Now he's, you know, we're talking about him.
What was the record before this?
There were two of them.
Dean Bevo Francis.
Yeah, that was okay. So that was the record. But the interesting thing is, and this is the kid I want to talk to, is his teammate set the D3 record last year, scored in the high 80s, is still on the team, and only had 7 points on Tuesday night. So if anything, I mean, that just goes to show you the MO of Grinnell. And listen, they got on TV a couple years ago with ESPN because they run this LMU offense on steroids, as it were. But how does it feel to be the kid that had the record, set it last year, and then it's just obliterated by your sophomore transfer? This kid transferred, by the way. It's his fourth game with the team ever. I mean, there are so many angles to this thing. It's bizarre.
What I think it shows is that if this school, this particular coach, wanted to turn anybody into a record setter, just says, okay, we're playing a 40-minute basketball game tonight. Hey, kid, I want you to go out and get 80 or 100 in this case. You know,
Or get you 20.
They could probably do it with anybody, couldn't they? I mean,
they get Parrish 20. I don't know.
Isn't that really the takeaway here? Any guard in you know, Division One, he could put on that team and they could get 100.
Or how about that? Like, forget Division One. Like, I any guard. It, like, again, it's not like the kid shot 60% from three. What's his percentage, Norlander? I know you know Matty numbers.
I think like 30. Overall shooting percentage was 48 total.
Yeah, but what was from the arc?
No, yeah, it was lower than that. It was
like 30 something.
Low 30s. Yeah, I don't know it off the top of my head. It was low 30s though.
The kid missed 50 something shots.
Imagine Rodney Clark taking all those threes.
Oh God,
I'd hate to see that.
Okay, can we go big picture here though? Here's the thing. Here's the big picture. The kid's on SportsCenter. Everyone's talking about it today. And now, if I'm a guard at the D3 level, where the hell do I want to go if I live in the Midwest? I mean, clearly.
It's for there. If I'm a D1 guard that's not playing, I'm going to Grinnell.
If I'm a D3 guard, I'm just quitting basketball. Like, what's the point at that point?
Hey, don't hate on the non-scholarship athletes, you Memphis grad. Anyway, so that was the big one. Had to address it to start off. Just a ridiculous story. And actually, you know, the gimmickiness of it kind of is tying a bow on college basketball's November, which has been nice. But with the games on boats, there's been some criticism that the sport's got some attention, but for some of the wrong reasons, it's only fitting that happened. Let's go where you guys are in New York. Paris is still going to be there. Goodman's got to get on a flight and head to the Bahamas here in a few. But
I'm still there tonight. You got to get my schedule straight.
Right, that's right. You're flying out on Thanksgiving. That's right. My apologies.
Goodman's got the late game tonight.
No. Actually, I've looked at it. My flight's too early tomorrow. It's in the sixes tomorrow morning. I think you're taking the late game tonight.
That is not true. I've already got a column. I've already got a Delaware column ready to roll.
You're not writing. You're not writing off Delaware. You're not a blue head.
I took the late game last night, man.
I took the one in Atlanta. It's your turn still.
I don't. Hold on. Did you take the one out there?
I did.
Yeah, but that was because you wanted to write about Kentucky.
Hey, whatever the case, I'm leaving early. You're sleeping in.
Okay. You think I'm sleeping in? I got a 9-year-old and a 16-year-old and Kelly here with me. There's no way I'm sleeping in.
Well, you got to take your kid out.
I got back in my hotel room last night. I left Barclays at 3 a.m. You know, you take the train back into Manhattan. I got in bed at 4 and probably fell asleep at like 4:30. Those clowns were up at 7:45. I want to murder all of them. I hate them all.
And you had, you know, you painted it up two nights prior, too, because I saw a tweet from you at 4:28 in the morning, and I saw it when I woke up at, like, 8:30, and I was like, oh, God, Paris.
Yeah, that didn't help things.
Before the wife got into town, I would assume.
Yeah, it started innocently enough. That's pretty much how all my stories began. Me and Rob Doster from NBCSports.com and then Brendan Prunty from the Newark Star. Prunty.
Yes, you said so, Prunty.
Because so we hung out with Irishmen. They were really impressed with his last name. They were like, "That's a real Irish name." So we go into an Irish bar, and we make friends with the bartender, and he decides he's closing at 3, but he enjoyed us, so he said, "Hey, why don't you guys just come with us? We're, you know, me and him and his buddy, we're going to another place." Long story, not so long. I look up at some point. I'm sharing stories with the Irishman. I look up, Rob, asleep in a chair. Brendan, asleep in the chair. Needless to say, I snapped a picture of that. But if you look at our cab receipts, like when we got out of the cab to like get back to the hotel, it was 5:33 a.m. So it was a hell of a night.
Jeez, that's beyond anything Final Four-wise in the past couple of years. That's impressive, dude.
Thank you.
You know, early season, got to get into shape. Okay, let's talk about the actual hoops and what you guys saw at Barclays the past couple of nights. I will go with the big team first. We'll touch on Indiana. Impressions of this team, I'll go to Goodman first. The good or the bad, I don't know if there's too much bad. Maybe a little bit of, you know, wait and see with this. But, I mean, I like their pieces. Yogi is looking very nice. Zeller's got plenty of stuff around him. I know Watford can kind of do a little bit of a disappearing act. But, Goodman, what are your thoughts on the Hoosiers right now, and what should fans really take away from what they saw at Barclays?
I guess they are what we thought they are. And they're a really good team. I don't think they're all powerful, but they're a good basketball team that I think is going to continue to evolve. I don't think we saw the real Cody Zeller. He had been sick, really hadn't practiced much over the last week and a half. But Yogi Ferrell gives him that different dimension. He can run. He can really get up and down. He can guard as well. You know, he's not going to put up huge numbers necessarily every night. But again, he changes the pace of the game. He changes their whole dimension because, unlike Verdell Jones from a year ago, they actually have to guard him. I mean, last year they were basically playing 4-on-5 with Verdell Jones. Now you have a legitimate threat there. Jordan Hall has just gotten so much better. And this was a good win. You know, was it a win that's going to blow you away against Georgetown? No, but you know what? I think it was more impressive that they were able to hang on in overtime than if they had just kind of cruised throughout the whole game, because they're going to need those type of wins. They haven't really played as kind of the hunted at all. This is kind of their first game after playing nobody over the first, you know, three games of the year. I think they played like Bryant, Sam Houston, and I don't know, one of the Dakotas. I don't remember. I get them all mixed up. But anyway, I think this Indiana team's really good. Do I think they're number one in the country? I still think Louisville's a better basketball team, especially if Cody Zeller doesn't become a dominant force at some point soon.
Parrish, you were there both nights. Can we go to Georgetown with you? I mean, this was certainly a coming out party for Otto Porter, whose draft stock is so high.
First, why can't Goodman just take the late game tonight and then sleep on the plane in the morning?
Okay. Dude, I got to go to the Bahamas. I'm
still on this.
I get there on the beach.
Yeah, sleep on the beach.
I got games. I got four games to prepare for.
Then maybe you shouldn't have come to New York once you knew I was here.
I already did it before. See, the difference is I already had my New York trip planned, and then you, unorganization, at the last minute decided to come here.
Is unorganization a word, Norlander?
That's a great question. I think it is. Hold on.
Look that up while I'm telling you about Georgetown.
Go ahead, do it.
They lost the top three scores from last season, unranked in the preseason, picked fifth in the Big East, but that's kind of only because nobody else knew who to pick fifth in the Big East. You know, it sort of became jumbled there. And listen,
it's not a word. Go ahead.
Oh man, it's not a word.
No, unorganized is the only iteration.
Let's go back to talking about Jack Taylor.
And so listen, they come here. They're 3-1. As John Thompson III said late last night. They came here to win. So they're disappointed. But I think if you're him and you step away, you got to feel good about what your team looks like through four games, particularly these two up here. They beat a inexperienced and still trying to figure it out, but very talented UCLA team, and then played Indiana, you know, literally to the final buzzer. The spread got a little out of hand in overtime, but that's misleading. I mean, this is a game that was back and forth, and played well. And, you know, I think we all knew Otto Porter was really good, and he is. But the other kid, the other sophomore,
Starks.
Greg, 6'8" kid.
Oh, okay.
Listen, when you do this with Gary Parrish, when you go in and Gary knows one player in your team and you leave and now he knows for the month, he now can actually rattle off like three or four names, I think, on that team, you've done well.
Thank you. And so, but like those are two pros. I mean, those are two guys that they're going to play in the NBA. And then, Starks has been, he was good here. I don't know how good he is.
He's good.
Yeah, but he was really good here. And then, you know, Goodman's favorite player, Nate Lubick, is still in the middle. And I mean, that's a really good basketball
team. They got like, you know, Devontae Smith-Rivera is going to get better. And the kid Trower came in and gave him some minutes. They're a good team, like you said. They're a feared team because of their length, their system, and they've got now some pretty good young talent.
That's a team that, you know, usually we don't just launch people into the top 25-1 after a loss. Georgetown, provided they don't lose this weekend to Mount St. Mary's, they'll be in the top 25-1 on Sunday night. They proved that they're that kind of team in a win over UCLA and a close loss to Indiana.
It speaks to how well Georgetown played and Indiana's Indiana that we have not yet gotten to Shabazz and UCLA. We're going to do that now. I remain very pessimistic about UCLA in general. I was before Shabazz played. I still am. He looks like he's got to shed some freshman 15 off. He definitely looked different from the player we saw on the recruiting tour last year. Goodman, go wherever you want with this team or with Shabazz as a player. You wrote about him Tuesday night. What were your impressions? And what is UCLA going to be you know, in the next 2 weeks? And should we expect a lot of growth from this team by February, or could this be a possibility where it would be similar to last year and that UCLA was obviously a huge letdown? They're more talented and they're going to be better, but should we expect a huge growth of progression with this team?
They were, first of all, they were not fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I don't know if Gary would agree, but they were not a fun team to watch because defensively they're a train wreck. I mean, they don't have the athleticism. They don't seem like they have the desire. You know, the Ware twins aren't overly athletic and good defensively. Obviously, Kyle Anderson is not. Josh Smith looks terrible. I mean, I feel bad because he's such
it's sad. It's straight up. It is terrible. Depressing.
It really is because, I mean, he could have been a lottery pick, but now he'll never be drafted. So anyway, this team really can't guard. So Ben Howland, to me, I think ultimately a lot of how good this team's going to be comes down to how stubborn Ben Howland is. Last night, clearly they were much better when they went zone. And I don't understand why you wouldn't go zone a good portion of every single game, because that's where you're going to be more effective with this team. They have length. Other than maybe Larry Drew, they have length at every position. So they could be effective. But again, I think it comes down to they look like that soft, typical West Coast team, other than Shabazz Muhammad, who is tough and I like a lot as a player. Am I going to buy into Shabazz Muhammad being the number one, two pick at any, you know, overall? I'm never going to do it. Gary loves him. He's got him number one. I don't think he's skilled enough. Again, I don't buy it. I love how hard he plays, how competitive he is. I know he's only played two games, so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and wait on him. But again, this UCLA team has a long, long, long way to go.
He's only played two games. He's out of shape. He barely practiced against BCS opponents, and he's averaging 20 points per game. He's going to be fine. Beyond that, I agree with Jeff completely. This is going to be an interesting dynamic in UCLA at UCLA because – with Ben's job on the line, to keep it, he has to be successful. And to be successful, he probably has to do things that go against everything he believes in as a basketball coach. That means get away from man-to-man, play zone. And on the offensive end, you probably got to recognize if you're going to play man-to-man that you're not going to be very good. You're not just going to shut people down defensively and overwhelm them on that end of the court. So you might have to try to outscore people, and that's not what Ben likes to do either. But he's got an interesting a group of players, and I don't think there's any team in the country that has a – from where they are now to reach their ceiling has a longer way to go. It's unclear whether they'll be able to do it. I think the first part is trying to figure out exactly how to play, but it seems clear to me after watching them twice here – you know, if Ben wanted this to be one of his great defensive teams that can win games on that end of the court, like he did at Pittsburgh, like he did early at UCLA, the roster is not built for that. But the roster is built to score if you let them go score. And so it'll be interesting and fascinating to see if he'll get away from what made him a successful coach to try to make him successful with this particular roster.
It's a baffling personnel team for
totally.
Ben.
Totally.
It doesn't make sense. It's almost like somebody else came in and said, we got to recruit these guys, because none of them really fit what Ben Howland was about at Pitt and certainly what Ben Howland was about at the beginning at UCLA, you know, the grinder types. And he really got away from that and continues to get away from that. And that's where I think ultimately I'm not sure they'll be a top 10 team like many think they'll be at the end of the year. I think they'll still be in the equation in the Pac-12 in the top couple spots. But the more you watch them and the more you watch Arizona, the more you kind of fall in love with Arizona and say, what the hell with this UCLA team? I'm not going to buy them until I see that they're actually, you know, going to defend, because, frankly, I'm not even sure they can score enough points to win games against good teams unless they start running it all through Kyle Anderson, which is what I think they need to do.
They only had four assists last night, and in night court, I just kind of noted that no team with Kyle Anderson should ever only have four assists, and no college basketball team, period, should ever have four assists. I mean, but specifically with a guy like his talent, so unique, 6'9", can play the point, they got a ways to figure things out here. There's been a lot of stuff that's gone down this week, so many games. I don't, you know, I can guide you guys, or I can just ask you if anything else has stuck out. I mean, Texas is a mess, and the whole Mike Kabongo eligibility thing, that's like a sidebar. Who knows when that's going to be? Butler looked awesome. Carolina definitely not. I mean, anything else kind of stick out to you?
Yeah, I think Carolina is the one that I think should be the story right now. I mean, as much as anything, and Butler gets spanked by Xavier and comes back and wins that first game on kind of a Hail Mary from Rodney Clark, and then they take care of Carolina, I think it almost speaks more to the question marks that we all kind of saw with Carolina coming into the year. But, you know, Gary and I both kind of put them probably higher than maybe they should have been based on their name. And, again, they could be fine at the end of the day, but their pieces, when I went down to practice in Chapel Hill, their pieces just don't fit together well, starting with the fact that they do not have a guy, and they always have in the Roy Williams regime, that you could throw it down to in the post. McAdoo is not that. He'd rather play with his, you know, face in the basket. You know, now Dexter Strickland wants to be a scorer. You know, they have P.J. Harrison's a scorer. They can't. People talked about how much better they're going to be defensively. I don't think they're any better defensively, and they're certainly not nearly as good offensively.
Didn't have one block against Butler.
Wow. Yeah, that game last night, I think, tells me more about North Carolina than it does Butler, too. Because, listen, we've seen Butler in the two games prior get run out of the gym at Xavier. And, like, you know, maybe Xavier's okay, but they ain't supposed to be. And then have to get a buzzer beater to beat Marquette. That's not a team that should be able to, on a neutral court, dominate a preseason top 10 team, but that's what they did to North Carolina. So it suggests to me that, listen, Brad Stevens is really, really good. We've known that for a while, but also that maybe North Carolina isn't quite as good as some of us thought. The other thing that we haven't really talked about that's, you know, a big time story for a top 10, top 20 type team is Gary Harris getting a shoulder injury at Michigan State. I mean, who knows how long he's going to be out now, and that changes the dynamic of that Michigan State team that we saw in Atlanta last week.
Definitely could. He's getting an MRI on Wednesday today. We'll see what happens. That could be certainly huge for Michigan State, who has had some slow starts in years past but hasn't let them slow up come March. Maui always delivers, though. I mean, that Butler shot from Clark, you know, it's funny. He didn't have a good game. It's an absolute one-handed prayer, the kind of shot you kind of just like play, shoot in your driveway when mom calls you in for dinner and you kind of just huck one at the hoop before you head in and it falls. I mean, Matley just always delivers, but Goodman, you're heading to Atlantis, which...
Well, it always delivers, but how about this? Your Maui championship games, Butler and Illinois?
No, and listen, great on Gross, but the team caught breaks to get there, but hey, but still, you know. Got some wins. I know it's a little bit of a letdown in terms of the title game, but we've already had our share of good stuff happen from that tournament. And I love just how every year there's at least one game that gives us a really good highlight or a really big storyline. This year was no different. As we turn ahead, Goodman, you're obviously going to be in New York tonight, but then you head to Atlantis for Thanksgiving. So that'll be kind of cool, right? I mean, you're bringing the family though as well, so you got to balance that, and you're staying on the resort, right? What's this place like anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I hear great things about it. Everybody, you know, ton of people vacation there. They love it. I mean, the bottom line is when you can go to the Bahamas, see, you know, six top 25 teams, I guess VCU's out now, so we'll call it five. It's clearly the best field, and be able to, you know, steal a little bit of time with the family for Thanksgiving. You got to do it. And, you know, I've been in this long enough now to realize that, you know, you got to try to fool a few people and, you know, Parrish.
Gary, how did you let that happen, especially Memphis is down there? Or did you want to actually bypass the ability to go to the Bahamas to hang out with me the day after Thanksgiving at Madison Square Garden?
How did I let that happen? I didn't send an email that's in June that says, hey, I'm going to the Bahamas. That's the same thing. Usually we have a conversation about this stuff. It's like, okay, listen, hey, why don't you go here? I'll go there. Yeah, you can do this and I'll do that. And in this one, there was no conversation. And I'm not sure why, because it does make sense for me to be there, given that, you know, I host a radio show in Memphis, Tennessee.
You host a radio show in Memphis?
The award-winning, top-rated radio show in the history of the city.
Look at that.
Man. You learn something new every day.
So, I'm pretty sure I've said that at some point on every podcast.
Yeah, somehow you managed to get it in there subversively or just out and out say it on nearly every one. So,
no, but it's a terrific event down in the Bahamas, and you know, almost no matter what happens, like you won't know that though.
You unfortunately will not get a chance to witness what a great event it is. I will. I might even send you a postcard.
No, it's going to be cool. And I can't wait to read what you're writing from down there. I'm really looking forward to your Michigan-Pittsburgh column later on tonight. And then your
I got Delaware. I'm all over. Listen, if you can name a player on Delaware right now, you can write that column. Quick.
All I know is Monte.
Monte, you know, that's their coach.
Yeah. I don't know. Hey, I don't know anything about Delaware, but I'll be on. I cannot wait for that 7 p.m. tip, man. It's going to be nice. It's going to be nice. And then, you know, you'll get to sleep on the plane a little bit tomorrow, get a little sleep in the morning on the beach, and then you got a day full of basketball, and I'll be watching every word you type, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Game start at 1 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow while you're eating turkey. So, we're going to flip. We're going to flip.
Well, no, listen, Parrish doesn't, and this is where I let Parrish kind of go off on his annual rant. Parrish doesn't eat turkey. So you want to go off again? You want to explain to everyone why you don't like Thanksgiving, why turkey is the most overrated food in the history of mankind here, Gary?
I'll keep it quick, but let's just see. Like, if you put turkey on a table next to roast beef, people take roast beef every time. You put that, and beyond that, how about turkey next to pizza or turkey next to hamburgers or turkey next to steaks or turkey next to
tacos? Your poor kid has no chance.
Or chick? How about like? Listen, you ever seen like a tray of Chick-fil-A nuggets laid out at a party? They are gone within seconds, right? Put a tray of turkey out, see what happens. Just sits there. And so the idea that we as a country celebrate an entire day based around the idea that we have to eat turkey when turkey is not one of our favorite foods seems ridiculous to me. Like, I don't understand why we just, you know, like steak. Like, hey, let's all get up on Thursday and just eat fillets all day long. That sounds awesome. Hey, let's get up on Thursday and eat pizza all day long. People love pizza. But turkey, you know, it just seems like it's forced upon us as a society. And I'm fundamentally against it.
I love how, yeah, Gary thinks we're just doing this for tradition's sake. People don't really want to be truly eating all this turkey. What are you doing tomorrow in the city with your family then? What are your Thanksgiving plans? You got your kid, your wife, and the exchange student from what country?
Italy. She's from Italia. And so she's
another exchange student?
Yeah. We had Germany 2 years ago. Now we're in Italy.
You're a hell of a humanitarian. You know that, Gary Parrish? Oh.
Like once you get into the exchange student Rolodex, if there are still Rolodexes, they hit you up and then they just guilt trip the hell out of you. And I'm like, okay, fine, we'll do it. And so, no, she's a sweetheart of a girl. I'm assuming, you know, after I file my Delaware column tonight, I'll get in bed and then get up tomorrow, and we'll probably go do the Macy's parade, right? I mean, you know, it's right here. I the kid got to see it when he was young. Like maybe two or three. He's nine now, and so we'll take her to the Thanksgiving parade and just sort of let them experience something that they've watched on TV many times. And then, you know, for lunch, I don't know that we'll have a traditional Thanksgiving dinner. The last time I was actually here for Thanksgiving was the NIT season tip off, like in 2005, I think. And it was, you know, UCLA was here, I remember. Memphis was here. And so I had Thanksgiving dinner that night with UCLA, which I just remember sitting with Jordan Farmar. Me, Kelly Aiden, and Jordan Farmar shared a table.
What?
Yeah. And so –
where, though? Like at some sort of restaurant with a reservation?
Well, no. The Marriott Marquis had like a – for the teams, the NIT
gotcha,
team.
Gotcha, yes.
A big Thanksgiving dinner for them. And so we just went. We got invited. And so, I think my son's first ever Thanksgiving dinner in New York was with Jordan Farmar and Aaron Aflalo. And so this time I think we'll probably be a little low-key. I don't even know that we'll have turkey and dressing and all that stuff. It might just end up being a nice Italian meal somewhere.
Well, you know, you do that parade thing, and I got to tell you, parades and fireworks, you do them for your kids, the most overrated waste of time. You're surrounded by a bunch of people. People are the worst. I mean, that's just going to be hell, dude. So good luck.
And how about this? Have you seen this parade, the Macy's parade, like up, you know, here?
No, I've never seen it close. And the key is you got to have a hookup with someone with, like, you know, a 17th floor loft. You know, you don't want to be on the street, but I assume you're going to be on the street.
Well, yeah, well, that time back in 2005, we were actually at the Marriott Marquis. We were staying there, and it you know, you just look down, and there's the parade, right? I mean, out your window. Here, I'm staying over on 49th and Lexington, so it's not on the parade route. But I will tell you this, most disappointing thing ever. Those floats,
dude,
that you see on television that look massive, they're not that big. They're not that big. And same deal. Like I've been here on New Year's, you know, to watch the ball drop once too. Most disappointing and dumbest thing ever. That ball's not that big. These floats aren't that big. It's much better on television.
Right. I mean, the whole notion of having people just stand to watch a bunch of big balloons float by. I mean, I don't get it.
I hate it so much.
Goodman, what did you want to say?
I hope it's like 20 degrees tomorrow and Paris is freezing his you-know-what's off.
Okay, well, you get to fly, so you're not going to have – I would assume it's going to be great because not a lot of people fly on Thanksgiving. But what are you doing for dinner with the wife and the daughter? Are you going to try and squeeze something in once you get down there? Any plans in place?
Yeah, they're meeting me. I get in early in time for the first game. I think they're going to miss the first game, which I'm not sure which one it is, to be honest, that won. So there's like a one and a the problem is all the games are good. So it's not like you can just kind of
kind of neglect your family on Thanksgiving to write about VCU.
No, I'm going to pick my spots and probably miss one of those four games. I got to figure out which one and make sure I don't miss a really good one. But yeah, I've already got standing invitations to eat with a few of the teams, but I'm gonna try to find something, and I probably need to get on that right now because I hear reservations book up pretty quick over there. So I have no idea where or when or how I'm going to eat with my family.
I can see it now. Hold on. Goodman's daughter's like, Mom, where's Daddy? Meanwhile, Goodman's eating with, like, Johnny Dawkins in Stanford.
And no, and you know, it won't even be that. He'll be eating with the third assistant from Northern Iowa. That's the way it's going. I'm just glad I'm not the CBS accountant who has to approve an expense report that allowed Jeff Goodman to go to the Bahamas and skip basketball games.
All right, good deal. Well, I'm a huge Thanksgiving guy. I got the annual football game with the brothers. I'm the oldest of four, so 2-on-2. We're all kind of getting up there in age, in our mid-20s. I'm in my 30s, so the years are running out on this.
Hold on. What? You and your grown brothers play football?
It's absolutely ridiculous, unnecessary, but yes, we still do the 2-on-2. I think we're finally shifting away from tackle and have admitted that that Mother Nature and Father Time have caught up with us and are giving way to two-hand touch. But, yes, sad as it is, we will play 2-on-2 tomorrow morning at about 10:30. It will be on a high school field. We will play a 50-yard field, and there will be video of this. I know.
Me and my brother used to play Legos, but, like, we grew out of that, you know?
Oh, I know. Well, but it's, it's football. It's brotherly competition, and there's ridiculous insults and pride on the line. I mean, you can't just so easily give in to giving up such cherished family traditions, man?
I disagree.
I know. Well, when you're one of four brothers, it's a different situation altogether. So,
I'll take your word for it.
All right, fellas, this was great. Hey, listen, I want to give thanks right now to both of you for being so fantastic, not just as coworkers, but as guys on this podcast week in and week out. You sacrifice your time. I appreciate it.
I think I'm going to cry. As long as Parrott writes about Jamel Hagans and Devin Sadler tonight, then I'll cry.
No, there's nothing better than Goodman, like, not only refusing to give you the early game, but then pushing the column on you what he thinks you ought to write. I can't listen. I'm going to let
That's
you
the listen. Story.
I want Goodman to be able to have this Michigan. I mean, the Michigan versus Pittsburgh, man, you need to be writing about that. And just let me hang out with the Delaware.
You want to go to a concert tonight?
I'm so tired. I've already done the math on it. It's going to be very difficult to try to get from the Garden to that concert in time. I'm probably not going to be able to make that.
But who?
That's why you're going to write the late game.
What act are we talking about here, though? What?
Connor Oberst is that guy.
Oh, okay. That's your guy.
He is one of my guys.
Bright eyes, man.
Yeah, I would like to go. I actually do not think that it's possible to get from one place to the other. But I will. I just have to see what time I file my Delaware call and see if I can make it work.
All right, good deal. Fellas, thank you so much, and thank you all for listening. We might have a Friday podcast. I can't guarantee it. We'll see how the holiday shakes out and if I can get a guest at the last minute to talk about all the games. But if not, we will be back on Monday, and Seth Davis will be joining us on the show next week. So thank you both. Thank you, everyone. Happy Thanksgiving. Eat well, eat safe, and travel safe, and we'll talk to you soon.